Good evening, and welcome to my basement lair. My name is Kingman Bon Graham, and I am your host for a show I call Death Mysteries. Tonight, I'm going to finish my third installment on the city of Portland, Oregon, going over all the homicides that have happened in the year 2021. Well, that's not quite accurate. I don't have enough time to go over all the homicides for the year, because there's been a lot more than ever before. The previous record year was 1987, where Portland, Oregon had 70 homicides. It was not uncommon back in the 80s, especially the mid to late 80s and the early 90s, for homicide rates to have spiked. In fact, the nation saw a huge increase in 1991, and that kind of was the crescendo for the murder rate for the United States as a whole. And then it started to decline gradually up into the 2000s, where we saw a murder rate that plummeted. Well, that has all turned around recently. 2020 and 2021 have turned out to be the bloodiest years on record for the United States. We have seen huge increases in the murder rate, where we're estimating it might be as high as 30 to 40% increase nationwide, with some cities seeing a doubling, tripling, quadrupling in their murder rates. Let's not talk about Chicago, LA, you know, Cincinnati, some of these places that have seen crazy spikes. We're going to talk about Portland because it has seen a huge increase for this little old city in the Pacific Northwest. Now, I do have to say that this is actually the second time I've recorded this episode. I hope that I can do a better job this time. First time, I recorded almost the whole thing, was sitting down, processing it, editing it, walked away from my computer, came back the next night, and guess what? I had updated my MacBook, and the file is now corrupted. I cannot get the episode that I recorded to come back on GarageBand, so I am starting from scratch. I'm glad you've listened through my really long monologue in the introduction to tonight's Death Mysteries. Stay tuned. My goal tonight is to bring to you one or two cases from every month of 2021 leading up to the date of this recording, which is October the 3rd. And I really would like to cover all of them, but I don't have time and I can't do them justice. In fact, I can't do the crimes that I'm going to cover justice because we just don't know enough about them. I'm not one of those deep dive podcasts that has time to research historical cases and do, hours and hours of really in-depth recording with a group of friends because, hey, I'm the only person here. I don't have a co-host. In my last couple of episodes, you know, I brought on the lovely Melinda and then I brought on the lovely Sabina, and I really appreciated their input and their participation and their teamwork on my Death Mysteries podcast. But I don't have a permanent co-host, and if you're listening to this and you reside in Oregon, preferably in the southern part of the state, and you'd like to collaborate with me, you can come to my basement lair and lay down a recording with me and see if you like it. And if you're listening and you're further away and getting together in person is not feasible, if you want to record an episode with me, reach out to me at deathmysteriespodcast@gmail.com, and maybe we can get together virtually. Everybody's better at virtual stuff these days because of the, you know, that thing that I don't really want to talk about, that mask thing that has been going on. I'm ready for World War III. I'm ready for, space aliens to make contact. I'm ready for anything to happen in the next big news story because I'm really tired of the news story that's been plaguing us. Some people actually say that the coronavirus has something to do with the skyrocketing murder rates. I don't know. Causation and correlation, they're very, very tricky to, figure out. So maybe there's something going on there, or maybe we were just due for a spike, a crime spike in the United States. Portland. Yikes. Okay, so we're going to start off with a couple of cases from January. Are you ready? On January 17th of 2021, at about 3:30 in the morning, phone calls started coming into 911 reporting shots fired. And when the police arrived on scene, they found 31-year-old Frank Gouland and 28-year-old Adam Adams, who went by Kikoa, dead in the street as a result of gunshot wounds. These two men were actually related by marriage and were brothers-in-law. I think that, from what I can surmise, that Frank Gouland had married the sister of Adam Adams. Both of these men had young children, and their families are actually shocked. They may have been out at 3:30 in the morning, but they were both employed, they were both family men, and they weren't known to be involved in any gangs or anything like that. I kind of did some snooping and looked on their Facebooks, and it's really sad. Lots of pictures of them smiling with their kids. They did have neck tattoos, and that means something to some of the population. But in this day and age, hey man, I know I work with a bunch of guys with neck tattoos. It's not the sign of criminal activity that it used to be. It used to be only people who went to prison got neck tattoos. Not so anymore. Your insurance broker might actually have one these days. They look like really nice young men who had a promising and bright future. And I always like to say to my audience that nothing good happens at 3:30 in the morning when you're out in the street. Where they were shot was actually on 143rd Avenue and Division Street. And it seems like maybe they were leaving a bar or after party after the bar is closed. They were probably just brother-in-laws going out and partying. The police say they don't have any suspects. They don't have any motives. The family doesn't really have any suspects or motives, at least not publicly. They have been, this has been in the news a little bit. I wanted to start out with a double homicide, and I actually noticed through doing my research and taking my notes that there's been a number of double homicides in Portland this year, and one of the common themes is that it's usually young men out at bars or out partying midnight or later. For me, my drinking days are over. My partying days are over. I don't go out to bars anymore. So I'm not going to be doing that. That leaves me a little bit less high-risk lifestyle. But, it doesn't matter. If you're out there partying at 3 o'clock in the morning, you still shouldn't get shot to death. That shouldn't be a high-risk lifestyle decision in my book. Just a damn shame. Many of the cases I'm discussing are homicide by firearm, but that's not the only way people are murdered. It can sometimes be by vehicle and often by knife. It's important to note that homicide rates have skyrocketed, and so has the incident of shootings in Portland. Year to date, they're approaching 800 shootings in Portland. And we're quickly approaching, I think we were at 64 homicides, and the previous record was 70 homicides set in 1987. So we're getting close. I would like to say that it's going to slow down and maybe we won't reach 70, but it's doubtful because it's October 2nd, and we still have October, November, and December. That's 3 months to fill the gap of 6 homicides to either equal or eclipse the record number in 1987. The next case I'm going to bring to you is actually a stabbing homicide that now we have a suspect that we're looking for. It occurred on January 31st. And the Portland Police Bureau just released a few days ago that they have a suspect. They've issued an arrest warrant for this guy, and they're out looking for him, but he's still on the loose, and the police actually need your help to find him. about 70% of the homicides in Portland remain unsolved. And of the 30% that remain, that actually get solved and maybe lead to a conviction later on in a court of law years later, most of those actually occur within days or at the very most weeks after a homicide. So usually the police, they actually know who they're looking for and they find somebody at the scene, or they very quickly develop information which leads them to a suspect and they have cause to arrest them and they actually take them into custody. On January 31st of 2021, at about 5:30 in the evening, a young man named Jason Mazza Jr., who was just 19 years old, was stabbed, and he subsequently died from his injuries. So this homicide actually occurred on 120th Avenue, just like the ones I covered in the previous case. Jason and his girlfriend had just walked out of his mother's home on their way to the market to get some snacks and, you know, probably some chips and some soda. And as soon as they left the house, they were confronted by another young man and a young lady. And I'm going to say young lady and young gentleman. Yeah. So there was a confrontation out in the street, which led to Jason being stabbed. Apparently, Jason and the suspect got into a fist fight, and the guy he was fighting was maybe losing. He pulled out a knife, stabbed Jason. Jason fell to the ground and was unresponsive within 10 to 15 seconds, according to his girlfriend. She ran and called 911, and she tried to render aid to Jason. His mother remained on the phone with 911, and police and paramedics were there within minutes, but they could not revive Jason, and he died from his wounds. Sounds like he was probably stabbed in the heart if he went down that quickly. On August 25th, 2021, the Portland Police Bureau issued a press release saying they were seeking the public's help in finding Gerson Perez Gill, who was only 18 years old. So, you know, this Gerson guy, he's 18. He murders Jason, who's only 19. The girlfriends involved were all 17. You know what this tells me? Youth violence is crazy. I can't even imagine stabbing somebody to death at 18, 19 years old. Well, I can't imagine stabbing anybody to death now, but to have that much hate and animosity and come from such a rough neighborhood, and my neighborhood wasn't the best growing up, but it wasn't the worst. But I can't even imagine living in a kind of culture where, you know, you go to fisticuffs really quickly and then you stab somebody to death. And once that happens, you can't take it back. I mean, it's just a damn shame if you ask me. And I say that a lot. So the police say, you know, if you see Gerson Perez Gill, do not approach him. And if you want to see photos of him, he's really easy to Google because there's a bunch of information out there about his being wanted by the law right now. And, you know, Jason's life's over. This Gerson Perez Gill, you know, when they catch him, and they will, you know, his life is effectively over. He'll probably go upstate for 15, 20, 25 years, maybe even life, depending on the circumstances of the crime. Jason's mother, who witnessed the crime, his girlfriend, the other girlfriend involved, the girlfriend of Perez, Gerson, can't even say that. Anyway, everybody involved has shock and trauma, and, you know, Jason's never going to be able to hug his mother again, go get another bag of chips. He's not going to be able to, you know, go to college, go to trade school, you know, have kids of his own. He's not going to be able to do all those things. Just you know, a young life cut short over a stupid fist fight. I'm going to say it, over fucking nothing. On February 27th, 2021, we have yet another double homicide of two young men out for a good time who never made it home. William Peters, who went by Billy, had just celebrated the birthday of his four-year-old daughter, and he decided with his fiance, his mother's brother, and some friends to go out and hit a bar/strip club called the Acropolis, Along for the ride was his friend Adam David Lawrence. Well, the rest of the group had actually gone home, and only Adam and Billy remained at the strip club. At about 11:30 p.m., as they were leaving the strip club, I've been to only one strip club my entire life, and it was actually up in Canada, of all places, Windsor, Ontario. And long story short, I was my old girlfriend from college, her aunt and uncle were actually police officers up in Windsor, Ontario, just across the bridge from Detroit. And they loved to go to strip clubs. So I actually went out to a couple of strip clubs with a bunch of police officers who were off duty and hung out. And it was quite the time, but that was my only experience with strip clubs. So it was kind of fun, but I don't think I'd do it again. Anyway, so these guys were trying to leave the strip club, and after they exited into the parking lot, somebody ran up on both of them and shot them both. And as I understand it, Adam David Lawrence actually died on the scene, and Billy Peters was transported to a hospital but died en route. The police actually don't have any real good leads in this case. I don't know if it was another patron at the strip club who followed them outside. I don't know if it was a robbery. Details are real sketchy, but one thing I know about strip clubs is they probably have lots of security and they probably have lots of camera action. So the police the operative word here is should be able to get some kind of physical evidence, maybe in the form of surveillance video, and maybe narrow down their search. But no arrests have been made. No persons of interest have been announced at this point. And, it's been months since this homicide. This was back, February 27th. This incident occurred at about 11:30 p.m. And I guess they were actually found in front of the Goodwill, which is, right next to the Acropolis, the fancy strip club that is the Acropolis. Both of these men had grew up together in Lincoln City. Adam was actually a resident of Lapine, Oregon at the time of his death. And Billy Peters had been living in Portland for some time, having moved out of the high desert country into the big city. For him to be murdered on his daughter's fourth birthday, that is just heartbreaking, especially for his daughter, for the whole family. But especially his daughter, I can't even imagine growing up knowing that your dad was murdered on your birthday. And, 4 years old, she's old enough to understand what's going on. She knows what happened. I'm sure she's sheltered a little bit from the details, but she'll find out. And, I guess my point is that these murders, just like all murders, they have far-reaching consequences, and they hurt a lot more people than just the victim who winds up dead. The whole family, the whole community hurts from these type of things. I really hope that they can run down the killers of these two young men, both of whom I should say were employed, who were making a living, and were pretty good upstanding members of society, and they weren't living a high-risk lifestyle. And I'll say that over and over again. We always hear about people who are addicted to drugs, who are prostitutes, maybe involved in drug dealing or other criminal activity, maybe even mobsters. And those are high-risk aspects to life, right? But going out to a strip club, that is what I would call a medium-risk aspect to life. They weren't even out after midnight, for crying out loud. They were leaving at 11:30. So it's not like they were out at 3:30 in the morning like our case from the beginning of this episode. They go out, they're at the wrong place at the wrong time. Maybe a strip club is a little bit higher risk, and they both end up dead. So I'm not gonna be out at 3:30 in the morning, and I'm not going to any more strip clubs, and I'm not hanging out in the parking lot of strip clubs. Again, I'm not victim blaming. I'm just saying, keep your head on a swivel and be situationally aware. Stay out of places like strip clubs. That's just my advice. If you like strip clubs and you want to go there and you want to, spend a bunch of money on a lady to look at you and pretend like she likes you, hey man, that's your thing. Go ahead and do it. Oh, I was just about to move on, but I forgot to mention one last thing about this case. The day after Billy was murdered, his fiance, Melissa Moore, went to the Acropolis strip club, went out into the parking lot, and actually collected blood from the blood puddles using her shirt. And she, I guess the blood was still wet enough the next day, where she took canvas, you know, like canvases like you paint on, and she made hand impressions with the blood on the canvas and took it home, maybe hung it on her wall. That's just, well, that's just unusual, let's put it that way. So now she has a shirt she can wear with Billy's blood on it, and she's got a canvas with Billy's blood and her handprints all over it. And well, I guess I should mention that, you know, crime scene cleanup isn't done by the cops, and it isn't done for free. And I'm guessing the strip club didn't want to pay to have one of those fancy crime scene cleanup, you know, outfits come to their parking lot and hose down the blood. And, yeah, I mean, apparently the police got all the evidence they needed and just left the blood puddles there. And, you know, Melissa Moore, she was free to go back and mourn in her own way and collect Billy's blood. A little bit gruesome, but also quite interesting, and I'm going to say a little bit entertaining. You know, it kind of harkens back to the Victorian era, where there was a lot of gruesome souvenir taking from dead bodies, like hair, blood, all that kind of good stuff. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that real quick before I moved on. On Tuesday, March 9th, 2021, Portland, Oregon saw its 20th homicide. At about 2:25 p.m. in broad daylight near Dawson Park, shots rang out, and a man named Titus L. McNack, who was only 42 years old, lay dead on the sidewalk just near the park. I guess he was right down the street from the park, so he was probably hanging out there. The reporting caller who phoned 911 said there was a group of men hanging out in the park drinking. And shots rang out, everybody ran, but Titus McNack fell down and died from his injuries. Now this happened, you know, there could have been kids in the park. I've never been to Dawson Park. I guess it's on North Williams Avenue in Portland, another area I'm not familiar with. But, you know, for this to happen in broad daylight on a Tuesday afternoon, that's pretty damn brazen. And it sounds to me like, you know, there might be nefarious things going on in this park, especially if there's a murder. When I was in my early to mid-20s, there was a park across the street from the house I lived in, and it was kind of the center for drug dealing and day drinking and, you know, fights and homeless people, and I like to hang out there. It was fun, you know. That was my kind of crowd of people, people living on the edge of society. I would get off work, and I'd go over there and have a couple beers and hang out, and I was friends with a lot of the homeless people there. I was friends with some of the drug dealers and friends with everybody who hung out there, basically. And yeah, things got violent sometimes. There were some stabbings. There was never a shooting. There was a lot of fights and other stuff that happened there, and I actually did know a couple of guys who ended up committing a heinous crime against another guy who hung out there, and one of them went to prison for life, and one of them is dead by a drug overdose before he could be captured. So hanging out in the park, that could be a kind of high-risk lifestyle decision. Now, I don't bring this up very often, but Titus McNack was a black man. The two victims from our first case were Pacific Islanders, so Frank Guland and Adam Kikoa Adams. One was from Hawaii, one was from Palau. You know, our third victim, Isaiah Maza Jr., was Hispanic. Our other two victims, Billy Peters and Adam David Lawrence, were white. I guess what I'm trying to say is homicides cut across all ethnic lines, but I do see a clear-cut trend in that black men, and especially younger black men, are by far the most likely victims of gun violence in particular in most of our cities, and Portland is no different from that. When I'm looking through all the cases that I want to cover, I'm seeing black man after black man who is shot to death. And yeah, it's just, it boggles my mind. There's something wrong with our culture. Not something wrong with any particular race. And that's not what I'm trying to say. But there is something definitely sick and wrong with our culture when we have so many young black men killing each other. And when we have so many young white men killing each other, so many young Hispanic men killing each other. And I guess what I'm trying to say is so many young men killing each other. That is by far the bulk of our homicides. It's men killing other men over stupid shit, testosterone, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, murders that don't involve young men. There's a lot of serial killers who kill women. There's a lot of women who kill men, who kill other women. I mean, it's really, it has no, there's no clear definition of a murderer. But I would say if you're going to look at trends, look at young men killing other young men, and look at what happens amongst our black population. Just boggles my mind. And I think we all know the sociological implications of this discussion, but I'm just going to point it out there, and just going to say it. In trying to figure out just who Titus McNack was, I looked on Facebook. There's a couple of profiles that he obviously authored, and I can see that he's originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I can't really figure that much out about the guy, and I will say that he's one of those people that didn't have a huge social media footprint. I can't figure out where he was working or much about his family. Just another murder victim. I hate to say it like that, but it's true. Well, after my political philosophical discussion in the last case, I thought it would be a good time to bring up our next case. The 23rd homicide of the year for Portland was a woman, a 53-year-old woman named Kim Lambright. On March 30th at about 8:30 in the morning, police got a phone call saying there were shots fired in a wooded area at the corner of Southeast Barber Boulevard and Southeast Capitol Highway. They responded to this report of gunshots and found Kim Lambright dead in the woods, the victim of a single gunshot wound. Now, I've actually seen pictures of this crime scene, and it is underneath the overpass of a freeway. There's a wooded area, basically a freeway overpass, which I assume is Capitol Highway, which goes right across Southwest Barber Boulevard. So the story goes, as far as I can tell, that earlier in March, Kim Lambright's boyfriend was shot by another man, and Kim went to the police and said that she was a witness to this shooting. I guess her boyfriend survived the shooting, but she was also a witness and that she feared for her life because she was a witness to this violent crime. She feared that she would be killed and become a victim herself. It appears that she could see the future, that her life really was in danger, and the police weren't able to protect her. This is one reason I'm a big fan of concealed carry. Not that I conceal carry myself, but I do like the fact that Oregon will issue concealed carry licenses as long as you don't have any felonies on your record. And it's an open carry state, so if you have a firearm in most places, you can open carry. Now, not in Portland and a lot of the big cities. They don't let you open carry like in Eugene. But here where I live, I see them regularly open carrying. And I know that a lot of people concealed carry. So if my life was in danger, I probably would concealed carry everywhere I went if I genuinely thought so. I don't know if Kim Lambright had ever been convicted of a felony or had any other disqualifying things in her past, but, you know, I I've also come to believe that, you know, maybe you get caught with some drugs when you're younger. Should that mean that you can never own a firearm for the rest of your life? Do you think that's fair? Maybe you made one mistake when you were younger. I know we have expungements and we have ways of restoring your rights, but those are expensive. They disproportionately affect minority groups and other people. And it seems like we're much more interested in, you know, disarming our population than allowing people to get the training they need and properly concealed carry, especially in cases like Kim's, where her life really was in danger. I don't know if a gun could have saved her life, but it would have given her more of a fighting chance in this case. And this case gets even more tricky because it appears that Kim Lambright was actually experiencing homelessness at the time of her murder. And the wooded area underneath the overpass where she was shot was her place of residence. She had a tent in this area, and the man who shot her came down to her tent at about 8:15 in the morning and killed her right there in her tent. So, you know, a tent's not a lot of protection from a gunshot. In fact, most houses are not good protection. Bullets will travel right through sheetrock and insulation. They'll travel right through most walls. Unless it hits a stud or some other barrier, your house isn't necessarily going to save you from a gunshot, especially if your house is made out of thin canvas or whatever that material is, that acrylic plasticky material that tents are made out of. So the shooting of her boyfriend happened on March 17th. And so 11 days later, on March 29th, she would be killed. And I guess the shooting of her boyfriend happened in the same location. So this guy that they knew was dangerous had already shot her boyfriend, came back and shot her, even though she told the police this was going to happen. So homeless people especially don't receive the same protections from law enforcement than that people who have a home receive. You know, maybe if you're homeless, you're not a taxpayer. Maybe you're living a lifestyle that, you know, a lot of people look down on. And a lot of people don't treat homeless people with dignity and respect. And I know that law enforcement doesn't give them the same services that they do to people that have a, you know, a good job and a fancy home and a nice car and all that kind of stuff. I know homelessness is a choice for many people, but it's not always a choice for everybody who's homeless. Sure, there are able-bodied men who want to hold up a sign all day for 2 or 3 hours, maybe get $50 and go drink, and that's their life choice. Then there are other people who are mentally disabled, physically disabled, and they don't have a lot of family, or maybe the family they do have doesn't have enough money to help them out. And those people have nowhere to go, and they end up in tents, and they are truly victims in these cases. I guess what I'm trying to say here is, you know, it's a damn shame that that society has failed Kim. You know, she didn't find her place in the world. She ended up in a tent. The police failed to protect her, even though she said she was going to end up a victim herself. And she did. And now to the part that gives us some hope in this story. The police actually know who they're looking for. Noah Charles Smith. I'll say that name again. Noah Charles Smith, who's 34 years old. He was the man who was charged with attempted murder of Lambright's boyfriend. Now, I couldn't find his name. Actually, I could. His name was, sorry about that. I'm looking at my notes, and I looked at a different case. Christopher Barrett is his name. And so this Noah Charles Smith shot Christopher Barrett. He was rushed to the hospital out of his tent. And, you know, I was just lambasting the police for not giving the same services to homeless people. Well, in this case, the paramedics showed up to this homeless camp. They took this guy, Christopher Barrett. They took him, even though he's homeless, can't pay his bills, you know, doesn't have any money for the hospital. They took him to the hospital, gave him emergency surgery, saved his life. And, you know, taxpayers were going to pay for that. And that's something I'm totally okay with taxpayers paying for. Every life is precious, right? This Noah Charles Smith character ran off and was on the run. Cops didn't find him. He came back, and because Kimberly Lambright had witnessed this shooting, he comes back and he shoots her. If I was Christopher Barrett And I was going back to my tent in the woods knowing that I was shot. And then days later, my girlfriend was shot and killed by this guy. And he's still out there. Man, I would be worried. I'd be looking to get out of town. And maybe that's what this Noah Charles Smith is counting on, that his victims will run and not be able to be located and testify against him. And the case will fall apart and he'll, you know, be free to hurt other people. I don't know if this Noah Charles Smith guy is also homeless, but whether or not he is, you know, he's picking on the people in our society who cannot defend themselves, who are at high risk living in tents in a homeless shelter. He sounds like a real piece of work. He sounds like he's real dangerous. And I really hope the police can find him, you know, sooner rather than later, because he's dangerous to every single person out there. So this is one of those cases where they actually have a person of interest, a suspect that they will probably be able to get into custody at some point if he doesn't die of some other, you know, something else before they find him. And I'd say, you know, that's just a damn sad case. But it's not always young men, young black men who get killed. Sometimes it's 53-year-old women. Okay, so I have another oddball case for you guys tonight. The next one does not fit the mold of most of the homicide cases that I'm going to be talking about or that I read about. On April 11th, 2021, at about 5 p.m. at the corner of Northeast 122nd Avenue and Halsey Street, a man by the name of Faustino Gerardo Correa was crossing the street in his mobility scooter. Now, Faustino was disabled. He had to use his mobility scooter to get around. And yeah, this one is rough. He was crossing the street when a silver pickup truck, possibly a, well, not possibly, they've actually found the truck, I should say, a 2002 Dodge Ram 1500 quad cab that was silver gray, came racing down the road and ran over Faustino in his wheelchair slash mobility scooter and then fled the scene. A few days after the accident, the truck was located, but police have been unable to develop a suspect in this case. They don't know who was driving the truck is what I'm trying to say, to put it in plain English. I don't know who the truck was registered to. I don't know what information they have, but Crime Stoppers is actually looking for information in this case. Now, you would think when they find the truck, basically the homicide murder weapon, that they would be able to say, oh, you know, it's registered to this person. Maybe that person says this person was driving it if they weren't. But no. We have the truck. We know he was run over. We actually have surveillance footage of this truck right after the crime scene right after the crime happened, but we don't know who was driving it. You know, this person probably feels bad, for running over a disabled person in a wheelchair and then leaving the scene while he lay there dying in the street instead of rendering medical aid. Or they could be a complete monster and not care at all. But obviously, they put their freedom and their well-being ahead of Faustino's to the point where they would just leave him there in the street to die, you know, an hour later from his injuries as the paramedics were working on him. It appears that the truck broadsided him, knocked him out of his wheelchair, and ran him partially over, and he died from his injuries. Again, this is another person, just like Kim from our last case, who couldn't defend himself, was, you know, disabled, so he probably, you know, wasn't working much. I mean, a lot of disabled people work, but what I'm trying to say here is he was definitely an easy target, a victim who couldn't fight back and, you know, was in the strata of society that is easily taken advantage of. I'll just say that. God, I hope they find out who ran over Faustino and, you know, throw the book at him, especially for leaving the scene. Maybe if they'd called the paramedics right away, maybe if they'd rendered aid, they could have saved Faustino's life. I don't know. Faustino was just 47 years old. I really don't know that much about him. I tried to look up on Facebook, couldn't find one. One thing I can think is that possibly the driver of the pickup truck was intoxicated. A lot of times those people leave the scene and thought, oh, I'm going to get in trouble for being drunk. Well, now you're in a lot more trouble for leaving the scene of the accident. But yeah, this is actually a public service announcement for my listeners. If you ever drink and drive, even if you're not drunk and you get in an accident and God forbid you hurt somebody, it's going to be a lot worse for you, a lot worse. And that's one reason I don't drink and drive. You get caught drinking and driving, even if it's not your fault and somebody's hurt or killed, man, the consequences are way worse. You might as well go out and rob a liquor store or commit some other heinous crime because you're going to go away to prison. That should be enough to keep you from drinking and driving. It's not smart. Don't do it. If you think you want to, call Uber, call Lyft, stay where you're at, whatever. Stay safe because you could lose your life. You could kill somebody else. You could end up in prison for the rest of your life. You could end up on probation, felony on your record, you know, lose your right to own a gun like I was talking about earlier. All of that kind of stuff can and will happen if you drink and drive. I promise you that. That's enough on my soapbox here, but I really hope they find Faustino's killer. This isn't a case of, first-degree murder or that kind of homicide, but it's definitely second-degree reckless homicide. On April 19th of 2021, another young black man named Calvin Jerome Jackson III, who was only 20 years old, was found shot in the street at the 800 block of North Webster Avenue and 19th Avenue, basically on the corner, about 9:30, 9:20 p.m. I guess the phone call came in at 9:26, so the shooting happened shortly before that. Now, some things I'll tell you about Calvin Jerome Jackson, apart from being 20 years old, he had managed to graduate high school and was enrolled in Portland Community College. He had a three-year-old son who actually witnessed the shooting. It appears that Calvin was on the street corner right in front of his house when he was shot and killed, and his three-year-old son was on the porch and saw the whole thing happen. So this is yet another case where a child witnesses a murder or has to grow up without a father. This is actually pretty common in that we see that young children are there. Remember I mentioned Logan Nettleton, my friend Bill, his granddaughter who was killed in Portland. Her one-year-old son was right there on the couch when she was shot and killed. That's what comes to mind for me. So these people don't care who's around. I mean, gunfire could have easily hit the child too, or somebody else's child. Bullets are, you know, they don't discriminate. They go where they go. Now, being 3 years old is old enough to understand what's happening, but not truly understand it. And I pray that his memories fade really quickly. I don't remember a whole lot from when I was 3 years old, but I'd probably remember if my father was shot and killed right in front of me. Apparently, Jerome was on the phone with his older brother when the shots rang out, and his older brother, I guess, raised the alarm, was immediately able to, heard that his younger brother had been shot. I think he was able to hang up or text somebody else, and they alerted the police. But by the time paramedics and police arrived, Calvin was dead in the street. I guess Calvin kind of fancied himself an entrepreneur. He was going to school at the community college to get his real estate license. He wanted to sell houses. and he wanted to provide for his young son. So he's a lot more than just another young black man killed in the street. You know, he had heart. He had a good smile. He was a good person. He's a father, a brother, a son, and probably would have made a damn fine real estate agent had he survived. Just another damn shame. May of 2021 was the deadliest month for Portland, having 19 homicides occurring in that month. That's almost one a day. I mean, well, there's, you know, 31 days in May, but that is a lot of homicides. That means, well, there was a couple of multiple homicides. But the first case I really want to bring to your attention is Jalon Marquis Yoakum. And he was shot while he was getting a piece of pizza from a pizza cart out in the street. So a street vendor on Northeast 118th Avenue and Sandy Boulevard. The reason I chose Jalon's case to highlight for the month of May is the fact that his family says he was involved in local street gangs, and his stepfather, J.W. Matt Hennessy, is actually a local pastor and is heavily involved in the Interfaith Coalition to Stop Violence, which is actively, it's a group of clergymen who are active in the community, and they're trying to stop the gang violence and the shootings that are plaguing the city, right? And we see these grassroots groups pop up all over the U.S., usually headed by churchmen and other local community leaders to try to stop the violence from the street level, you know, try to reach out. These are people who live in the community. They aren't outsiders like most police are. And that is one of the problems with our policing, is that they are often seen as outsiders. They don't live in the communities they police. They don't know intimately the people that are affected by the violence. And thus, they don't really have a whole lot of standing. They just show up after the fact, you know, tag the body, do a little investigation, and then, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, move on to the next case and file it away as one of their 70% of homicides that'll never be solved. So his mother, Jalon's mother, Tawana Hennessy Yoakum, is also very active in the community. And in a newspaper article that I found, she said that she didn't want any vigils to be held for her son. In fact, two of her other family members were shot a couple of days before Jalon's murder when they were attending a funeral for another friend of the family who was shot and killed earlier in the month of May. And so she said that, you know, funerals and vigils are actually very dangerous to have for these murder victims, because the gangs show up and they shoot people at these vigils. And this has happened a couple of times in Portland this year, and this has happened in other parts of the country. In fact, I remember, you know, a fictional account of this in Sons of Anarchy. There was an episode where they were having a vigil and another gang showed up and shot up all the people who are attending the funeral, and it was a bloody scene. And even though that's fiction, that is real life for so many people living in these communities. Having a vigil is not a safe place to be. And they know that, well, rival gangs know that the rest of the gang members that they're going to target are all going to be in one place at one time. And they don't care about life to the point where they're going to show up at a vigil or a funeral and shoot people who are attending it. You know, like shooting fish in a barrel, for to use a very, you know, a colloquialism that I probably shouldn't use, but I will say that. And I will say that J.W. Matt Hennessy was actually the witness to a mass shooting in December of 2020 that occurred just outside his church, right after church services. I mean, this is out of control, and I would say that J.W. Matt Hennessy, the pastor, is truly a hero, and we need more men like him in the world. And it's really a shame that Jalon was murdered. The street gang lifestyle, man, that is a high-risk lifestyle. That will get you killed, man. If nothing else will, gang activity will. And they don't have any suspects in the case. And, you know, with limited resources and nobody willing to come forward, either out of fear or out of the attitude of people that are on the streets living the gang lifestyle is you don't ever talk to the cops. And that's why so many of these murders go unsolved. And the clearance rate is, you know, 70% for the city. It's probably like 90-95% for these gang related homicides. So this guy, he was out there, you know, getting a slice of pizza at 6 p.m., broad daylight, shot down. And, you know, his family cares about him, but the police probably won't be able to solve this one either. And his murderers, whoever killed him, will probably be shot by Jalan's gang, you know, in the future. Just a vicious cycle. And one more thing I found in my research that, you know, leads to this gang lifestyle is that Jalan's father was sentenced to prison in 2010, and he's still in prison for being the kingpin, the head of the local Crip gang in Portland. So father is part of the Crips, son is part of the Crips, you know, it goes on and on. You know, we teach our youth our ways, and when you have parents and grandparents that have been part of this gang lifestyle for decades, you know, you got kids being brought up in this lifestyle, and they're turned into killers when they're kids. They're turned into drug runners, robbers, you name it. They're basically brought up in this lifestyle, and it doesn't end well for them. They either end up in prison, like Jalan's father, or they end up dead, like Jalan. There are so many cases from May that I could highlight, but I'm just going to point out the next case, which doesn't have a lot of information, but I do find it really interesting. And it's one detail that I want to point out that really illustrates how difficult it is to solve some of these crimes, as well as maybe how the police aren't putting the right kind of effort or as much effort into them, and their clearance rate is so low. This could be one reason. At 5:30 a.m. On the 200 block of 27th Street, officers arrived to find a dead man in front of a residence, and that man was 45-year-old Teron D. Pittman. And we always talk about people's ages, man. I'm 42. I hope I get more than 45 years on this planet. Knock on wood, right? So this is actually in Clark County. It's in Vancouver, which is a suburb of Portland. But, you know, they talk about this as being one of the Portland area homicides. And the reason I wanted to point this out is there's surveillance video of the suspect vehicle, which was a Dodge Charger, leaving the scene after Teron was killed. Police made contact with the owner of the vehicle, and the investigation went nowhere. They have made no arrest, and this is one of those cases that's, Crime Stoppers wants tips. The cops want you to call them with tips. I mean, you stopped the vehicle, you made contact with the driver, and yet there's no arrest, and the investigation is going nowhere. It just kind of baffles my mind. Maybe there's more to it. I'm sure there's more to it, and I'm probably, you know, making assumptions about this that maybe I shouldn't be. This one, I hope it doesn't go unsolved. I mean, they had a damn good clue from the outset. But here we are months later, and it is still a, you know, kind of active, coldish case. One more case from May that I want to bring to your attention and just add to this episode occurred on May 25th of 2021 at a homeless camp at Northeast 78th Avenue and Schuler Streets. I'm assuming it is another freeway overpass type deal with a wooded area, because most of them are. Officers arrived about 5 p.m. to do a welfare check on a tent, and they found a man stabbed to death. The victim was a 24-year-old man named Joseph Robert Sipe. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Spelled S-I-P-E. Basically, when they found him dead, they searched the area, and they were able to bring a suspect into custody that same day. The police arrested a man named Aaron D. Christopher, who was just a few blocks away on Northeast Halsey Street, and they had enough evidence to bring him into custody, and they charged him with murder in the second degree and abuse of a corpse. So this is one that apparently is solved-ish. I'm sure it hasn't gone to court yet, and this Aaron D. Christopher has not been convicted of murder as of yet, especially during the coronavirus. Justice moves very slowly, but I hope that Joseph Robert Sipe, I hope that he and his family get justice for this, and if this Aaron D. Christopher character is indeed his killer, that they will be able to prove it in a court of law and they can put him away where he won't be able to hurt anybody else. I don't know if Aaron D. Christopher was also a homeless man or experiencing homelessness for you politically correct people out there, but he probably was. And I see a lot of these cases in Portland and everywhere else. Homeless camps are, you know, violent, dangerous, drug-infested places. And there's a lot of homicides that happen in homeless camps. So this is just one more example. There's actually quite a few more that I could bring to your attention from Portland. And I think I did mention one in one of my earlier episodes. Yeah, I just wanted to throw that one in there as one of the May homicides. So I'm going to move on to June, and June was also a bloody month. The summertime often sees a spike in homicides, and amidst this spike in homicides for 2020 and 2021, the summers have been especially deadly. I'm going to talk about a mass murder, a mass homicide that occurred on June 6th of 2021. Four people were shot to death in a house. And I will read off the victims' names and their ages just to humanize them a little bit. 31-year-old Mitchell Nacoste, 27-year-old Kendall Gregg, 23-year-old Ian William or Willis. Oh God, I almost messed up his name. Ian Willis, and 24-year-old Donovan Linford. And they were all killed at the exact same time in the same location. This actually is what we call a mass shooting and a mass homicide. And I'm not a big fan of the term mass shooting. I think it's overused a lot, but in this case, you know, four people killed in a house, that's getting there. I mean, it's not 20 or 30 people in a public place, but it's definitely a mass shooting. This event occurred at the 4000 block of Southeast Boise Street, and it's thought that it occurred on June 6th, the same day that the bodies were discovered. Through my research, I was able to discover that Mitchell Nacoste and Kendall Gregg were actually half-brothers, that they shared a mother and had two separate fathers. Now, I've actually seen pictures of this house because there's a huge memorial set up out in front of the house and on the front steps to basically give the community a little place to lay their grief in the wake of a quadruple homicide. On that Sunday night, neighbors actually heard what they described as at least 20 gunshots coming from the house, and when police arrived, they found all four victims deceased. They're actually trying to piece this together. One of their theories is that it could have been a murder-suicide, but I don't know exactly how far that investigation has gone, because they say that they're not looking for an outside person of interest. It could have been as simple as maybe one or two or all four of these guys got into a gunfight inside the house. But police say that they don't have a suspect at large. It's still an open case. It's still an open investigation, so they haven't closed the book on it. But this really is a death mystery, in that you have four people found shot to death inside a house. They all died by homicidal violence. I don't know if one or more of them was a shooter. I don't know if one or more of them committed suicide. But they're all four, you know, young black men, and two of them happen to be brothers. One of the rumors surrounding this case, which I couldn't find if the police ever tracked this down, is that Donovan Linford and Ian Willis had actually come to Portland from Texas to buy marijuana from Mitchell Nacoste and Kendall Gregg, who were the two brothers living at the house. and that the deal somehow went bad and it ended up in a gunfight with all four men dead. And we like to think that marijuana is harmless, but this is a really common thing in Oregon and California too, where states that have prohibition against marijuana have gang members or other people involved in drug activity traveling to this area, purchasing large amounts of marijuana, and then bringing it back to places where they can make a lot more money on it. Because marijuana is legal in the state, don't forget that it's federally illegal in all 50 states. It's legal on the state level in Oregon and California, and a lot of other states too, like Colorado, and I think Mississippi even just made marijuana legal for medical use. I'd like to see the federal prohibition on marijuana lifted, because then you wouldn't have the profit motive, you wouldn't have the incentive for people to travel from other states to our state, buy large sums of marijuana, and then traffic it through interstate commerce and make 10 times their money in places like Texas. And it leads to murder. I remember a case back when I lived in California where some people had traveled from Pennsylvania, Connecticut, somewhere like that, out to little old Sebastopol. Was it in Sebastopol? No, it was Forestville. Little tiny town out where I used to live. And they came to do a marijuana deal, and they ended up murdering the people in the house there and then taking all the weed and all the money. And they eventually got caught, and I think at least one of them was sentenced to death after that. But they got the marijuana, and they went back to their home state, and they thought they were going to become rich and get away with murder, and no, that didn't happen. The marijuana thing actually sounds like a really plausible rumor in this case. So I couldn't find out if the police have actually marked this as closed, but that's as much information as I could get. And I'll just leave it with weed kills, man. The next case I chose for June 2021 involves a 19-year-old man who was gunned down by his 20-year-old friend. When I say friend, I mean they were friends in real life and online. And the motive for this shooting turns out to be social media. So apparently, I couldn't find what the dispute was, and I actually went on both of these guys' Facebook pages, or attempted to, and I couldn't find anything, and there's a reason for that. All the evidence was destroyed before the arrest was made, and that includes the social media post that sparked this shooting. So 19-year-old Alexander Martinson was shot while he was sitting in the back seat of a car. And his friend, Jason Nathaniel Props, who's 20 years old, was in another car being driven by a guy named Jairo Acevedo Hernandez, who's also 20. And so they drove up to the car that Alexander Martinson was sitting in the back seat. So they drove up, one car drives up to another, and they open fire. And Jason Props says that he actually was trying to fire warning shots to scare Alexander Martinson. And three of the shots didn't hit the car, so maybe they were warning shots, but one of them went into the back seat and ended up fatally wounding Alexander Martinson. So after the shooting, apparently, this Jason Props guy says to Jairo Hernandez, "Hey man, skirt off, you know, get out of here." Because maybe he did mean to shoot Alexander. Maybe he didn't. He's being charged with second degree murder. A few days after the shooting, Jairo Hernandez actually went around to everybody involved in the Facebook post and the other witnesses to the shooting, and told them all, "Hey man, delete the Facebook post, you know, wipe your phone clean, get rid of all the evidence and that kind of stuff." And so both Props and Hernandez are being charged with second degree murder, tampering with evidence, reckless driving, and use of a weapon in a felony, use of a firearm in a felony. So these guys, you know, all 19, 20 years old, I don't know if this Facebook bullshit was worth it to them. I don't know if it was about a girl, an insult, a perceived insult. It just sounds like a bunch of bullshit. I really don't go on Facebook anymore. I go on there very, very rarely. And I find that the algorithms actually show things to me that either posts from people or organizations that are designed to get me irritated in some way. At least they think it will. Their algorithm says, hey, you know, this might get you politically irritated or some shit like that. And, you know, sometimes it's stuff I don't agree with, but it doesn't get me super irritated, and I definitely don't want to kill anybody over it, but I find it to be pretty unhealthy these days. I do have a Death Mysteries Facebook group that I used to be pretty active with, and I started one of the largest mushroom groups on Facebook, Mushroom Hunters of California, like 7-8 years ago. You know, it's got like 12,000 people in it. A lot of good, positive mushroom interaction. That actually, you know, feeds my soul. I love the positive mushroom stuff. Facebook, it's all about mushrooms for me. Political shit, eh, delete, get out of there, ignore it. I wish there was an algorithm that would be like, none of that shit. I don't need to see people arguing. I don't need to see people getting upset. And I definitely don't need to be getting upset with my friends, you know? This is just a case of, you know, two young males. I don't know what the Facebook post was about, but, you know, somebody's dead and a couple other guys, they're going to prison for a long time. Ah, damn shame. So we're going to move on to July at this point. There were a lot of murders in June. I didn't count them up. And I think my count is actually a little bit off. I've been trying to tally them, but I do see in my notes that as of August 22nd, there had been 60 homicides. So I think we're just about at 70 or over. I'm going to have to count them up before the end of this episode, the ones that have occurred before I took all my notes and recorded this episode the first time. I do want to get a little political here in that 125 officers have left the Portland Police Bureau, some of them detectives in the homicide unit, in 2021 alone. So Ted Wheeler, the mayor of Portland, has said that he doesn't have enough resources, and that's why so many cases are going uncleared, and frankly, they are going uninvestigated. And Portland is basically in a state of emergency, and I don't say that lightly. We all know that there's been riots there, there's been Antifa, there's been a lot of protest and a lot of street battles, and they don't have the police resources to combat small-scale crimes, and they don't have the resources to combat murder anymore. So people are getting away with it left and right. And in July, July was another bloody month. On the weekend of July 15th and 16th, in the span of just 38 hours, there were 13 people shot. And not all of them died. I think only one of them died. But that just shows you the level of violence. I'm talking about murders here, and some of them are shootings, but there have been 570 people shot in Portland as of July 15th and 16th. And so I think we're approaching, you know, 700-800 shootings in that city as I record this podcast. That is a phenomenal number. You can't even put that in words. For a city the size of Portland, you know, there are 500,000 people in Portland. There are 2 million people in the greater Portland area. And for a city that size to see this level of violence, it is disproportionate. This isn't Chicago, but it's given Chicago a run for its money. On July 17th, we had another mass shooting incident in downtown Portland. At about 2 a.m., the Portland Police Bureau received a report of shots being fired on Southwest 3rd Avenue. When they arrived on the scene, they found 7 people shot. Now, 6 of those people would survive, but 18-year-old Michaela Marie Harris died as a result of her injuries on the way to the hospital, and she was shot once and did not make it. I don't think she was the intended target of the gunfire, but when you have 7 people shot in one incident downtown outside of the bars and nightclubs, really everybody's a target, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Nobody's safe. And, you know, that's not really a high risk lifestyle, if you ask me. I mean, everybody, when you're young, 18 years old, you want to go out, you want to hang out with your friends, you want to go to the restaurants, you want to go to, you know, I know you're supposed to be 21 to drink, but everybody wants to go to the nightclubs and the bars and hang out and have fun. And you should be able to do that safely. And to have a young 18-year-old beautiful woman like Michaela murdered in the street with a bunch of other people shot, that just shows you that Portland is really falling apart. They could really use those 125 officers that they've lost this year. Michaela had recently graduated from Grant High School, and she'd just taken her first real job outside of high school as a caregiver at a senior center. I see pictures of her. She's got a big smile. I mean, this young lady had a lot of heart to go out there and get a picture taking care of old folks. I mean, she is the kind of person that we need in this society, and to have her gone at 18 years old, never able to live the rest of her life. She lived a full life, but to live the rest of her life and to provide her giving spirit for the next 70 years, you know, she probably would have made it to 80, you know, 90 years old, something like that. It's a shame. It really is shame on us, shame on our society for this kind of stuff happening. The shooting was basically a gang-related drive-by shooting. These assholes drove by and shot into the crowd, you know, shooting 7 people and killing her. This is just, I don't even really have words for it, except for to say that these people are monsters. You know, they have no regard for human life, and they know that so many of the police officers have left due to the political climate that they can get away with anything, even driving by and shooting a bunch of people in a crowd. A little bit more about Michaela. She had played on her school volleyball team. She was probably going to go to college and, you know, be able to study and maybe even become a nurse someday. Some other capacity, we know she was a giving person working as a caregiver. And Michaela leaves behind 6 older siblings and her mother, who also worked at that care facility. So the whole family is absolutely devastated. The whole community is devastated. And it sounds like they were really good people. They are really good people. And, you know, this is just one of those cases that she was in the wrong place at the wrong time, young and trying to have fun, had no involvement with these asshole gang members who decided to target random strangers in the street and just play with guns. And guns are not toys. And, these people, they don't even know the consequences of their actions, and if they do, they don't care. I really hope this case gets solved. It is definitely one of those hot cases that the Portland Police Bureau is focusing on because she was such a young, innocent, beautiful woman and a target of the gang violence occurring all around Portland in 2021. At this point, I'm looking at my notes, and I realize that I have a lot more cases and a lot more notes and a lot more things that I'd like to cover about Portland. So I am going to conclude this series with 3 parts, but I'm definitely going to be coming back to Portland and doing more. I'm going to do a year-end recap. It's October 3rd right now, and God, so much has happened, but I'm going to cover August and September, and then I'm going to call it a night because it is, almost 3 o'clock in the morning right now, and I got to get up. I got to do some stuff tomorrow, but I've got a few more cases for you guys, so hang in there. I know this is a long episode. I really appreciate all my listeners for the attention you give me and the attention you're going to give these homicides that I'm bringing to your attention, and maybe take some of what I say to heart. The next case I'm going to bring to your attention happened on August 20th of 2021, and it involves an internet post, a very graphic internet post to Instagram. A video of the murder was taken by a witness and posted to Instagram for Johnny Polanco, the victim's family to see, for the entire community to see. The video was later removed, but Johnny went to the 7-Eleven by his house on Southeast 92nd Avenue and the corner of Southeast Holgate Boulevard. And he was there with his girlfriend to buy some snacks. And while he was there, two women attacked his girlfriend. Johnny raced to his girlfriend's defense, basically, and tried to get the two women to stop attacking her. When an unknown man enters the store with a handgun, raises it up, and shoots Johnny right in the head. Now, like I said, this whole incident was recorded on video and then posted to social media. Johnny was the 60th homicide for the year in Portland, and no arrest had been made in the case yet, even though a video clearly showing his murderer is out there. It has been removed from Instagram, but the video still survives. We know that once something goes online, it is never truly erased. It gets out there and it sticks around like a bad stink. And I can only imagine, you know, Johnny's brother, Rob Polanco, says that he's seen the video, he's seen it posted online, and nobody wants to see their loved one killed over and over on film. I mean, this is a snuff film. It's absolutely disgusting. The one good thing about the video is that it may lead to arrest eventually. It's just absolutely senseless. You know, you've got a fist fight between women. Johnny tries to break it up and he ends up getting shot by probably somebody who knows the other two women. You can't even go to 7-Eleven for snacks anymore. Damn, it's just absolutely disgusting. He sounds like a good guy. He had a lot of heart. You know, he was defending his girlfriend. He had a lot of courage, and he paid for that with his life. I hope this one's resolved. I think this one probably will get solved eventually. The other cases I've heard about, listening to other true crime podcasts, where videos are posted to social media, they're almost always solved. I mean, come on, police, Portland Police Bureau. I know you've got limited resources, and you're down 125 officers, but this one should be easy for you to solve. If not, maybe social media sleuths, true crime buffs out there that maybe have the time, the video's out there, you can probably get a hold of it. And especially if you live in Portland and you know this area, maybe you know the killer. Maybe you can help out the police or, you know, give a tip to Crime Stoppers. From Friday, September 24th, 2021 to Sunday, September 26th, 2021, there were 16 shootings, leaving 10 people injured in the hospital. That was last weekend. It just goes to show you that the violence is not ramping down anytime soon. I'm going to cover one case from September, and then I think there's one that just happened on October 1st or 2nd. I got a look. I think I saw something on my little computer device thing that makes phone calls. And then I'm going to wrap this episode up. There have been a number of homicides in September. Most of them are lacking in very many details, being so recent. A lot of the homicides I covered in this episode have the advantage of months going by with more information being posted about them by the families. Some of them have been resolved, as you noticed, and a lot of them haven't been. For September, there is a case with very little information that I think could benefit from me publicizing it. On September 19th of 2021, Sean Edward Garner was shot to death. He was only 44 years old, and not much is known about the circumstances except for the shooting occurred at the 8400 block of North Bandon Avenue in the early morning hours of Sunday, so sometime between 3 and 5 a.m., I think, and his body was found as the sun was coming up. He was dead in the street. No motive, no suspects, not much is known, and the police are not saying much at this point. But Sean Edward Garner, one of our latest victims of homicide, he was the 64th victim of homicide in Portland this year. And really all I have to go on is a single photograph of Sean posted with the news article showing him with a kind of grimace on his face, and he's wearing what looks to be a tuxedo, and it's kind of an older photo, maybe taken 10 years ago or so. And it's zoomed in, kind of showing a hand on his shoulder, and he's got a bow tie on. I'm assuming this is a photograph of him at a wedding being somebody's groomsman. So he was a real person who was loved and lived a good life. And that's pretty much what he's reduced to at this point, is a photograph and a very short news clip. I hope this case is resolved like all of them. The last homicide I'm going to talk about real briefly occurred just a couple of days ago on October 1st, and a man was found deceased inside a house on Southeast 128th Avenue. That man was 41-year-old Joshua Newell. He died from a single gunshot wound. The police are not releasing much information. His next of kin has been notified. They provided a picture of him smiling in a seatbelt for the press release, and they aren't granting any interviews, and they don't wish to have any contact with the media at this time. That's what the press release says. I don't blame them. So when I was talking about young black men being killed, and just young men in general, the last two cases I covered were middle-aged white guys in their 40s, seemingly randomly shot in Portland. I guess the moral of the story is murder can come to anyone, anywhere, at any time. There are evildoers out there looking to take advantage of you, looking to kill you for no freaking reason whatsoever. Sometimes they have a reason, sometimes they don't. I will say that every homicide I covered in this podcast tonight, every single one of them was senseless, and there is no reason that any of these people should be dead. I'm not going to be part of the coalition that blames guns. As you see, we had homicide by vehicle, by stabbing, by gun. By and large, there are a lot of homicides specifically committed with handguns, not assault rifles. Unlike what people want you to think, assault rifles are not the enemy. Handguns are not the enemy. This is me on my soapbox closing up my episode. The enemy is our society. This is my opinion. The enemy is our glorification of violence. The enemy is the lack of respect for human life that we have bred into our young people and basically everybody in our society, not just young people. But at the risk of going off long-winded, I don't blame guns. I blame the people and the culture that brings about this violence. And only you can decide how to stay safe in this culture. We are blessed with having a strong, compassionate society in many ways, but there's a darker side to us, and we've seen that in 2019, 2020, and 2021. I'm really hoping that we see this as an anomaly, that this murder spike is just that. It's a spike. It's not a continuation on a bell curve that just goes up and doesn't come back down. I'd really like to see 2022 and the rest of 2021 be a little bit more peaceful. And one of the best ways to avoid becoming a death mystery is to mind your own business. Don't go out into neighborhoods in the middle of the night, especially neighborhoods you don't know well. Choose your friends wisely. And instead of retaliating when there's a fight, like the Kung Fu masters always say, the best way to avoid a fight is to not get in one in the first place and to just walk away. And so I don't really think I'm that wise, but if somebody picks a fight with me, I think I'm going to walk away, especially if they're a stranger. Now, a lot of these cases, these victims didn't see it coming. You know, they were just standing out in the street. Maybe they were out in front of their house. How do you avoid that? Maybe there is no way. Sometimes fate just has your number picked, and that's it. Your ticket gets punched, and you're dead, and your family misses you. I wish all my listeners a very long and happy life, and some house cleaning stuff. I'm going to wrap this up. I swear to God, it's like an hour and 24 minutes into it, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I definitely want to go to bed, guys. I really appreciate everybody who's listening to this point. please give me a review on iTunes. Please give me a review on whatever platform, Spotify, anywhere you're listening, because I could use some reviews. I think I have one or two. I mean, not very many. Not like I have a lot of listeners, but tell a friend. I'm still looking for a co-host. If anybody wants to do this with me, I think we could be a lot better as a team. I'm just putting it out there. Or maybe I'll start doing funny voices, but I don't think that'll go over very well with my, my subject matter. Lastly, I'm going to say that October is upon us, and I'm going to do some lighter-hearted stuff for October. I'm going to do a couple of shorter episodes about spooky stuff, about stuff that is not so heavy, man. I mean, talking about all these murders, man, this has been heavy. I think that's a good word for it. This has been kind of depressing. Remember, when you're out there on social media, to mind your own business and be respectful. Treat everyone in your life with some respect. And don't become a death mystery if you can help it.